My Life as a Foodie is brought to you by BarkBox.com. We love BarkBox, but not as much as our dog Rex. Say hi to everybody, Rex. Come on, dude, like you mean it. Yeah, now we're talking. BarkBox is great. You tell them how big your dog's bark is, choose a plan, a 1, 6, or 12-month subscription, and every month, they'll send you a box of innovative toys and treats just right for your dog. Shipping is free, and you can cancel at any time. Sign up today, and listeners of the show will get 1 month added onto your subscription free when you sign up for 6 or 12 months. Just visit getbarkbox.com/foodie to take advantage of this special offer. Every month, BarkBox picks the best all-natural treats and innovative toys to match your dog's unique needs, including allergies and heavy chewer preferences. Edibles are made in the USA and Canada, and 100% of all products are tested on animals, their own. Because if it's not good enough for their dogs, it's not good enough for yours. It's cute, too. Every month, they have a theme like Country Fair, Bark Ball, Poo York City, Brooklyn Hipster, stuff like that. So it keeps things fun for you and your dog. Now, Michelle and I are deeply embedded in the dog business now, and everyone raves about BarkBox. Seriously, it's a real hit. It's a great way to try a variety of treats and toys from local and small businesses that you would otherwise be unable to find anywhere else. And if your dog doesn't like something in the box, they'll send your dog something they will love free of charge because they want your dog to be happy. They care that much. So take advantage of this special offer. 1 month free with your paid 6 or 12 month subscription. Visit getbarkbox.com/foodie and make your already happy dog even happier. I have been baking a ton of pizza, though. After that whole mozza thing, I just went crazy. And no complaints from the girls. You know they love it. They ask for it constantly. I did hear a good pizza joke. You want to hear it? All right. Did you guys hear the one about the Dalai Lama walking into a pizza place and placing his order? Yeah, I guess he told him to make him one with everything. The cashier says, that'll be $15. So he hands her a 20. She puts the 20 in the register and turns and walks away. And the Dalai Lama says, wait a minute, where's my change? And she says, change comes from within. All right, welcome back. Hey, I'm sorry if last episode not only came out of left field, but was a bit somber. But people died, for Christ's sake. You know, it's going to be sad. I'm just happy to move on from it and continue to live through all of that. You know, death is a part of life. I wish it didn't happen until we've lived more of it, especially if you still have something to offer. And the one thing I didn't hit on and meant to, but I didn't because I didn't want the show to run too long, was the aftermath of Bourdain's death. There was a ton of stories that came out. Some of it was really personal and, you know, I feel uncomfortable seeing, you know, a lot of the personal stuff. But one of the things was his net worth was not what you may have thought it was going to be. When news broke of his will, it turns out he left everything behind to his daughter. And it wasn't the giant nut that you'd expect from a world-renowned TV host who's been working consistently for almost 2 decades. And it's a little invasive, and I really didn't want to know any of that. But it spoke to me, or it spoke to perhaps why he continued to work as hard as he did. I don't know if he simply didn't make what everyone expected he was making, or maybe he spent most of what he made. None of that is really any of our business. But what it said to me, and this gets down to the meaty issue that I've spoken about before here on the show, is that you're not going to get rich in this food business unless you build a true empire. And I mean multiple restaurants, big ones, or a large media empire that you own. You know, Pock Pock New York, Andy Ricker's restaurant, just shuttered. And that's the second of his restaurants, that I know about at least, that have shuttered inside the past year and a half. He said it's become increasingly expensive to keep the doors open. David Chang spoke openly not too long ago about how hard it is to turn a true profit in the restaurant business. And he argued that for as much as people bitch and complain about prices, that food is still too cheap. The margins simply aren't big enough to support restaurants, keep them staffed, and all the other costs that you may not be privy to. So it's a tough business. So Eat, Race, Win is the topic of today's show. It's a behind-the-scenes adventure into the biggest annual sporting event in the world, the Tour de France. And I know that's going to raise a lot of eyebrows. Yes, the biggest annual sporting event in the world, even bigger than the Super Bowl. This show, which is on Amazon Prime Video, it follows Chef Hannah Grant, who takes us along on her race within the race as she sources performance food for Australia's pro cycling team, Orica Scott. And Hannah shows us exactly what it takes to perform at the edge of human endurance for 21 days of racing. It's the hardest bike race in the world. Now, for those of you who aren't into pro cycling, you might see this as a really boring thing to watch, a boring sport. And I will agree that on the surface, that's exactly what that is. And I don't want to get into cycling too much here because that's not what this show is about. Although, I do have a cycling show. It's kind of a video series called Spokes on a website that I have alternatively, cyclingoc.com. So if you're into cycling and that kind of thing, you can visit cyclingoc.com and visit me there as well. But there are three grand tours in pro cycling. They race all year long, a lot of stage races, multi-day races. But grand tours are 21 days of racing with a couple rest days thrown in. They do one in May in Italy called the Giro d'Italia. The one in July is the Tour de France. That's the granddaddy of them all, kind of like the Rose Bowl. And then in September in Spain, they do the Vuelta a España. That race in particular, I think, is harder than the Tour de France because mountains in Spain will kill you. So it's a tough sport. If you think it's easy, it's not. It's very, very hard. And you're very lucky to finish one of these races, let alone win one. So again, cycling can be like watching paint dry sometimes, even for people who are into it like me. I mean, I look forward to the Tour de France every year. And after the first week, I tend to get a little bored because not a whole lot happens in that first week. But there's always some drama. So you watch because you know something's going to happen. You know, you've got your favorites to win the overall classification. Someone might crash and lose a lot of time or lose time to a mechanical problem with their bike, or they might get sick, get the flu, or get a stomach ache. Anything can happen, and it changes the entire scope of the race within the first 10 days. And almost every year, we see at least one favorite drop either outside the race or drop outside of the top 10 within the first 10 stages. Hannah Grant cooked at Noma under Renee Redzepi. So you know the woman has some skills. And this isn't the first time that she's cooked for a team. So it's not her first rodeo.
My grandmother was one of the first female chefs in Britain. Her name was Hannah Grant. I wanted to be just like her. I wanted to be a chef. But my mother was not in favor of me becoming a chef. She didn't want me to be in that environment because alcoholism is so common in that business. I went to high school, hated it. And when I turned 18, I dropped out. I decided to join the Navy, the Royal Danish Navy. I met a guy who's now one of my very good friends, and he had just graduated as a chef. He was in the galley, and when I wasn't on the bridge, I would hang out down there. He was cooking for 75 people every day. I'm helping him, and I just remember this enormous pot of this white sauce, stirring it with a paddle. I had suppressed the idea of wanting to be a chef for so many years. And I'm like, wait, this is it. Like, I want to be a chef. And so I finished my time in the Navy and I went straight back to Copenhagen and joined the Culinary Institute.
When I graduated as a chef, I knew I wanted to get out of Denmark and travel as much as possible. The first job I took was the Fat Duck, a Michelin-star restaurant in England, which was at that time number two in the world. And I worked as a stagiaire, and that means working for free. And I was at Noma for the year where they became number one in the world for the first time. When I was 26, I wanted to study nutrition. It's impossible to work at a fine dine restaurant like Noma and go to school at the same time.
Then I was recruited by Danish cycling legend Bjarne Riis to cook for his cycling team, Saxo Bank.
Combining nutrition with working as a chef, working with professional athletes, that was a dream come true.
Now, if you like the type of food series where chefs visit farms to source ingredients, then come back to their kitchen and cook real humble food, this series is for you. If you're into pro cycling and want to know the ins and outs of team management and how these grand tours work, this series is for you. If you like both things, this series will give you a boner. I mean, either way, you're going to win. As far as the racing goes, and I don't want to get too much into this, of course, because I don't want to bore anybody who's not into pro cycling. The Orica Scott team, I thought, was a little bit of an odd choice. They really didn't have a GC contender to speak of, although they did win the white jersey, which goes to the best young rider, so that's exciting. And one of the riders, who they think may finish in the top 10, doesn't have the legs, and then news that his mentor had died while riding a bike comes during the race, and they think he might drop out of the race entirely, but he doesn't. But you can see it affects him mentally, and he just kind of fades. So there's not going a lot in the race itself, not a whole lot happens. But the real race is with Hannah, her food truck, and her crew. Now, I had heard that they were filming this during last year's tour, so I was really looking forward to seeing what this was going to be like, and it didn't disappoint me at all. So Hannah has two cookbooks on cooking for performance athletes, and it's certainly not what you might think. You've seen these healthy meals cookbooks or cooking for performance, and they are dreadful. Kale salads, veggie wraps, smoothies, lazy shit. Nothing that really makes you want to cook, nothing that makes you excited to eat it. And this is where Hannah stands out. And this is real gourmet cooking, home cooking, but it's healthy. And that's it. You don't have to eat bland tasting food when you're cooking for performance. It just has to be healthy.
When you're a chef in the cycling world at the Tour de France, you have a main goal, and that's to feed the riders. But performance is not just about food. It's about mental nutrition. It's about how food makes you feel good, boost your spirits. It's about food tasting so good that you want to eat and stay in the game. As we crisscross France, I look for food to fuel performance and build morale. I want to create food that makes the riders excited and happy to eat so that they can perform the best. This is our Bible for the tour. This basically has all the information like that you need to know. See, we start here. This is the riders' race, and the pink and orange one is everybody else's race. And for me and my crew, this means we have to go on that route, then we have to go shop or source, and then we got to go back on the route, and then back in, and then into the hotel. And the faster we can do all of this and get to the hotel, the sooner we can start working.
For a chef, having a movable restaurant that adventures across France, it sounds crazy, which it is. For me, it's a dream come true.
Here's the thing. Cyclists eat a ton of food. 6,000 calories that they burn during a day during the tour. 6,000. These guys are on their bikes for 4 to 5 hours a day, sometimes at full gas. They need to replace those calories somehow. Now, you might think, well, Hell, I can pile in 6,000 calories, no problem. Couple double whoppers with cheese, large fries, milkshake, maybe half a chocolate cake, plate of nachos. You get the picture. Sure, that's 6,000 calories, but you try eating that crap bomb during a professional stage race. You're not only going to bonk halfway through the race, you're going to shit your Lycra shorts. And in case you don't know, shitting your pants during a Grand Tour stage, yeah, that's frowned upon. You won't be invited back. But seriously, cranking out 6,000 calories worth of healthy food, containing the stuff you actually need to fuel the human body through an endurance race, takes some thinking. And that's where a chef like Hannah comes in. And I know this all may sound crazy. If you've seen a professional cyclist, not only does it not look like they're capable of eating that much food every day, it looks like they hardly eat at all. I mean, these guys, some of them look like Auschwitz victims. Ribs showing, zero muscle mass, you know, below the waist, these guys are all muscle. The sprinters, those guys are the exception. These guys look like running backs, legs like tree trunks. And there's a whole science behind how these skinny fuckers manage to crank their way up steep climbs and power through these races at the speeds that they do. And it goes beyond anything I can start to explain. Just know that nutrition has a lot to do with this.
Mountain ranges can be very taxing stages, up to 5,500 meters of climbing in one stage.
On average, the stages will take about 6,000 calories for a rider to get through. To break it down, that's four times the amount that I should eat in a day.
So the cool thing about this is the route that she has to take. There's a race route, so it's a start, point for the racers, and then they, go along their way and they get to the finish line. Her route is outside of that, and that's where all the other support crew has to go. So she not only has to leave when they do, she's got to get to the finish line before they do, so she's there so she can cook and have food ready for them at the hotel, and she can't be late. But the key is, she's got to source stuff along the way, get to the finishing point at the hotel, and cook for the riders that night.
Once the riders are gone, the bus is away, everybody else's race starts. Because every day we move to a new hotel.
House.
Please.
It's like a new level of Tetris every day.
One hotel, 10 teams. 10 buses, 20 trucks, 70, 80 cars. If we're not there first, we're going to be 2 kilometers away from the hotel entrance with the food truck, which really sucks because we got to get it into the hotel and serve it.
The other cool thing is that she does all of this stuff out of her food truck. You know my love-hate relationship with food trucks. Eating really good, high-priced gourmet fast food on a dirty curb where bums may have been pissing and shitting their pants the night before. No thanks. Especially here in LA. Eating off of food trucks, it's a dirty business. I don't like it. But she grills, preps, prepares everything on this truck, and they set up tables and stuff. The whole idea of a gourmet kitchen on wheels, that part appeals to me. The rest of it does not.
It's the same with every job. I'm more than 30. If you want to be a head chef, you have to do it soon because guys are 25 already doing a great job.
No, I'm just saying there's a limit to how much work you want to do. Like the other day, I was like, this is so stressful. And I'm like, I realized the second I forget my core, why am I here? We have to make sense of what we're doing. Yeah. I've cooked for bike riders to make them perform. It's like having 9 children. We are like little dogs that when we serve and they're happy, we get a response, we're happy. And it doesn't matter how much we hurt in our bodies if the guests are happy. I mean, that's how I feel, right? Do you agree?
This is
really, I mean, our currency, we get paid in the joy of the people that eat our stuff. And if they aren't happy, we haven't done our job right.
As a bike rider, you don't have to win the Tour de France to have done something worth celebrating. To complete the tour is a very unique experience that only a handful of professional riders ever get to have.
The last night before the stage into Paris, we always cook a quiet celebration dinner for the guys, where we serve a well-deserved glass of wine or two with the meal.
And you know, guys, there was so much audio that I wanted to share with you from this series, but I can't. You know, she goes to all these farms, growers, cheesemakers. The content there is just amazing, but everybody speaks French. It's subtitled, and it's great, but I can't play half an hour of audio, you know, of people speaking French here. So you must see it for the full effect. I'm just here to promote it, let you know it's worth watching. But the day for the cyclists starts with breakfast. They eat a carb-heavy breakfast. Nothing too heavy, but enough to get some calories in and build up those, you know, those calorie stores so these guys can rip through it during the race. During the actual race, they eat on their bike. Paninis, rice cakes, energy bars, special calorie-heavy drinks. Nothing that will wreck their stomachs, and certainly not full meals. But enough to get them to the finish line where their dinner awaits, hopefully. And that's where she crushes them with calories and complete comfort.
Because we're at the end of it, the appetite has gone down for everyone, so it has to be a really wide variety of things. And basically make sure that everybody has something that they want to eat. It's really, really crucial that they eat properly prior to these stages. And if they don't eat for breakfast, they simply just won't make it through the stage.
A rider's breakfast is typically something like a birch muesli. As a general rule, it's always unsweetened muesli. And this one is super good for carb load. So plenty of that is important. Then there's the other option for the more northern European guys, and that's the porridge. I always do them on oats with based on water, because some of the guys, they have a tendency to produce more mucus if they have too many dairy products. And if they want dairy products, they can always add it to it.
You know, it hasn't always been like this. You know, back in the day, they would have a chef cooking for these teams, but the food was always the same thing. You'd see a mountain of pasta that could choke a horse, some meat, chicken, whatever, maybe a salad. Every night, same thing, 23 days, every night. I mean, the race is murder enough. No wonder these guys got food fatigue. Mixing it up, providing healthy, delicious meals, keeping these guys wondering what delicious thing might be coming next, that keeps them feeling loved in a way. And, you know, Hannah says that cycling nutrition has changed a lot over the years. And that's what's great about food. We're figuring out what misconceptions we've had about nutrition. And those things have been keeping us from doing better, from succeeding, from going faster, from being more efficient. Like the need for fat for fuel. You know, quick sugars are great, but what does it do to your stomach? I mean, think about it. Have you ever overdone it on dessert? Or just had too much sugar throughout the day? The next day, your stomach is a mess, right? It happens. I mean, the body's resilient, but it doesn't mean we can treat it like a playground and expect everything to be all right.
Yeah, when I was an athlete, cheese was sort of on the ban list there with fat and everything, but the development in nutrition and what guys are eating, that's been a big change.
Which is good because it keeps everyone sharp.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, it's hard for that many days in a row to come up with new stuff and interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Before, 10 years ago, when that chef was still eating the same food for 20 days in a row, it was more about quality of food,
guaranteed
hygiene and quality of food. And now it's turned more into a nutritional game as well.
Yeah.
When you look at some of the incidents, you would have seen some horror stories in the kitchens.
Oh my God.
So cycling chefs have really actually now become a necessary part of the team, just like the masseuse, the physical therapist, the mechanics, the team director, all of the support crew, everybody. The chef is responsible for feeding everyone and knowing everything that it takes to keep these guys fueled for their race. I mean, almost every rider in the peloton is going to have at least one bad day. It's going to happen. No question. And it happens for a host of reasons. The last thing you want is to know that it's because they didn't get the proper nutrition from the chef. And I think having someone like Hannah there at the race with these guys, sourcing local ingredients, paying attention to the needs of the riders, acting like a mother hen, it makes a huge impact. And these guys, you know, they tend to get homesick after a while. They miss their wives, their families, their kids. You know, why not make them feel at least a little bit like they're at home?
The reason why the chefs came into cycling was because of timing, to serve food not 2 hours late, hygiene, to make sure it was clean and it wasn't bad, and then amounts. That was it. So in the beginning, it was just, you know, grilled chicken breast, mixed salad, pasta, ketchup, go. What happened with my old team was that if we fuel them and we have a chef to cook the food, why can't we apply the thought of food being something that can change performance? Food being something that can heal, food being something that can optimize recovery, sleep, leaner bodies, better fat percentage, longer lasting energy. And then all of a sudden, when you add that idea and philosophy to it, then food becomes more than just a fuel and something that needs to be eaten. Here we're hired to perform the best we can. So there's no excuse for being late with things, not having enough. I mean, it's just so important.
Eat, Race, Win is available exclusively on Amazon Prime. So if you're a Prime member, you can watch it for free. If you're not, I think you can probably pay to play. If it ends up being released on DVD or Blu-ray, it is a must-buy for me. I mean, I doubt I'll be a Prime member forever. But this is one of those things that makes having a Prime membership worth every penny. Hannah has two cookbooks, Eat, Race, Win and the Grand Tour Cookbook, that are also available on Amazon. But they're expensive as shit. I mean, wow. Am I that out of the loop now that cookbooks got this expensive? Have they always been upwards of $60? I mean, and maybe it's been a while since I bought one. But there are so many things I want to talk about now. I want to talk about Ugly Delicious, David Chang's series on Netflix. Incredible. Maybe within the next couple episodes, I'll discuss that. I want to talk about the several years worth of Top Chef that I haven't talked about. That'll fill a couple episodes. And that show kills me. Every season, the first episode comes on, I think, who the hell are these knuckleheads? I don't see a single one of these kids winning this thing. Then within 2 weeks, boom, cream rises. And it's as great as it ever was. I just feel that after Gold died, this thing, this food world that I've been a part of for so long, that I've loved, that's been good to me, that provided so much joy in my life, I felt like it was starting to shrink and disappear. You know, Chef Tui from Jeet Lara, he passed away earlier this year. Another one. And it all happened while I was taking a breather. I just started to wonder if you can even take a breath anymore. I feel like I abandoned this thing that I've loved so much. And while I was away from it, it began to crumble. And I wasn't there to save it or take part in it. I don't want that to happen. It means too much to me. And I know I haven't cooked on the show in a long time, so I'll try to do that soon. I know you all understand. Look, my life is different now. I have more responsibility than ever. I have a business. I have kids to look after. I have a dog. But my life as a foodie, however distant it may seem sometimes, is still alive and well. Hey, music in this episode once again from Mimosa. If you like the music, check out the link on our website, mylifeasafoodie.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at Phil Nagash. No more Facebook, but I wonder, it might be a good idea for me to at least post in the group so people don't bail on it and I can keep them updated on new episodes and stuff. Until next time, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie. Salud.